You're listening to Occult Symbolism and Pop Culture. I'm your host, Isaac Weisout. Today, we are back in the Grey Lodge. Back in the Grey Lodge, Season 2, Episode 12. You may not know it, things are heating up. They're heating up. You have no idea. You're watching it and you're thinking, Isaac, this is getting real campy, bro. And I'm telling you, they're giving you a little nugget every episode. Every episode, they're giving us a little nugget of a larger story going on, all right? And, you know, in this episode particularly, things do seem like they're really slowing down, all right? You start to feel it. Storylines are kind of becoming more forgettable. Nadine's going back to high school, bench pressing. James is fixing cars. Andy's fighting with Dick over who's the father of Lucy's baby. It starts to drag, right? Even the Josie story and Ben's mental instability, they're wearing thin. They're trying to transition from the murder and death of Laura Palmer, which is easily the most, I don't want to say that. One of the most interesting things about this whole story, right? The mystery, the intrigue. But I'm telling you, there's still mystery and intrigue there. It ain't gone. You're not going to find that out till later. But we got to stick with it, right? Because now the supposedly the Laura Palmer murder is solved. Now we're like, okay, well, now what are we doing? We're just loafing around, just hanging around in Twin Peaks. But I'm telling you, next episode, it'll pick up a little bit more, okay? So hang in there. Today, we're going to hear more about how Major Garland Briggs is tuned into certain hardware that only his military buddies could dream about. We're going to talk about that. All right, starts out, Bobby, he's visiting. Can we talk about how handsome Bobby is? My God, look at that hair. Look at that hair. I would have killed a man in the 90s to have hair like that. My bestie had hair like that. Oh, dreamboat hair. Bobby visits Ben Horn to see if he listened to this blackmail tape yet. This is Bobby's second stab at trying to blackmail Ben Horn. But Ben, he's losing his grip on reality, right? And he's stacking up furniture in his office. He's getting weird. And you'll notice that the furniture is stacked up in a pyramid. Again, I'll put the images out there for you to see. Instagram.com. I don't know. Instagram, Isaac Weisop, you know. Link in the show notes. The apex of the pyramid is an animal with white fur. Did you notice that? This is important because back in Season 2, Episode 9, just a few episodes, we saw that Albert talked about how the letter O was pulled from Maddie's fingernail and there was some fur from a stuffed white fox in her other hand. This is that same white-furred animal we saw in a previous episode, Season 2, Episode 6. Leland was sitting on the couch and he takes notice of the white stuffed animal. He was intrigued by this taxidermy animal. So there it is at the apex of the pyramid, on purpose, of course, intentional. Ben says, they're looking at this thing, and Ben tells Bobby, he says, you're standing in front of a mammoth skyscraper, a leviathan that rips a hole in the clouds. Now, what's the first question that comes to your mind? The first question that you ask yourself is, what's on the top floor? Who's up there in the penthouse, and why? Let's unpack that a little bit, right? The Leviathan is a reference from the Bible to the devil. And you'll see this in many different forms in the realm of the occult. Kenneth Grant types talking about the Leviathan, Nodens, Typhon, this adversary devil from the abyss, from the watery abyss, the Antichrist. All right. Talking about opposing polarities here. The Greek Septuagint translated it into the word dragon. And, you know, the big picture is that God will eventually have to have a battle with this evil force embodied as the dragon, Leviathan, the serpent, whatever, right? Because the Leviathan is the embodiment of chaos, or sometimes Babylon on earth. And it's also described as the dragon of the abyss, who will be a part of the apocalyptic end times, because that's one theme you're going to constantly be reminded of and thinking about as you watch all of Twin Peaks. Is there a higher picture for here? Is there a higher order of things that this is a spiritual battle between good and evil on the apocalyptic level. And in terms of occultism, it also draws parallels to the concept of the origin of our world and the serpent depicted as Saturn swirling in the outer realm, right? Because they, if you go to if you read The Secret History of the World by Mark Booth, they describe this occult version of Saturn as a necessary evil in forming and shaping our reality. He described Mother Goddess as a sort of fierce fighter, and then there was this other phantom, the Dark Lord of Evil, that was the god of Saturn. And the reason why is because Saturn is the principle of limitation. Saturn introduces death, right? It introduces the concept of matter. From formlessness to form, all right? I know it gets kind of strange here. And it's because of Saturn we're given this concept of individuality and separateness, which a lot of religions talk about how we're all connected, right? We were all connected. And because of Saturn, this force of matter and limitations and separateness, we divided up. And Saturn is the god of destruction. He eats his own children. He is the father time. He is the grim reaper. He's what feeds us but also destroys us. And he's what makes our lives difficult. He's a double-edged sword in a way. Saturn comes to kill, and he keeps coming back in different forms to try to destroy life, Mother Goddess. And this is what I read in Mark Booth's book. I don't profess to fully understand what he's talking about, but this is what the occultists apparently believe. And that Saturn would eventually be confined into his own sphere through God's phrase, "Let there be light," which pushed him away. And the spheres is an image, imagery you'll see throughout Twin Peaks is the sphere. I don't know if that's related or not, but the sun, it gets really weird. It talks about the sevenfold sun god rescuing Mother Earth from Saturn, because there's this idea of good versus evil, basically. And the sun god pushes Saturn to the outer edges of the cosmos, where Saturn is forced as the serpent, as the Leviathan, to circle the world as a dragon or a snake. It's all there in his book. But in Gnosticism, the Leviathan is depicted as the serpent as well, only this time as the Ouroboros, the snake eating its own tail, right? And this symbol represents the separation of man from the divine in this prison material world. And to sort of come back to this, my interpretation of how I understand it is that Saturn is this force that individualized us and made us live in this illusion that we're actually separate from each other. And a lot of the world religions say, no, we're actually all together as one consciousness. In Buddhism, they call it Indra's net. In Christianity, I would argue that it's the idea of going to heaven. We're all connected as one consciousness. And you see the idea of one consciousness in many different beliefs, the perennial philosophy and things like this. But the point to take away here is that the Leviathan reference, I believe, is important in this story because it's tying into the idea of an antichrist force, a devil force. And Ben is saying that the skyscraper is the devil. And he talks about the person in the penthouse, right? Who lives in the penthouse? It's the elites. It's the richest person in the building because it's the most expensive. Now, does this tie us back into the theory that we pitched way back on the pilot episode about how one idea of Twin Peaks is a battle between man and nature, right? What does man do? Man destroys nature to build a giant skyscraper for the elite guy to live up in the penthouse suite. Just a thought. And that's what Ben Horn's been doing this whole time, right? He's trying to plow through the Ghostwood National Forest to build housing units to make monies, right? That's what he's obsessed with. Maybe this is putting a crack in that armor, and now he's thinking twice about it. I don't know. We'll see. But Ben seems to accept Bobby as a business partner and says, look, I'm going to task you out. I want you to follow Hank and spy on him. I want you to tell me something I don't already know about Hank, because Hank's kind of You know, remember Hank and Ben had a little beef. I think it was the last episode. Over to Cooper, our favorite. He's being shown various properties because he's considering buying land in Twin Peaks. He flips it because remember he kind of had, now he's under investigation. He gave up his badge. Now he's just hanging out with, he's one of the bookhouse boys now. He flips a coin and lets chance determine where, which property to check out. It actually lands on a property that wasn't supposed to be in the list at all, called Dead Dog Farm. Meanwhile, Andy and Dick, they're talking to the foster home about this little boy, little Nicky, and they find out that his parents died, and they died under mysterious circumstances. Dun, dun, dun. Back to the Great Northern. Dougie Milford, recall, he got married for his fifth time, this time to a teenager. He dies on his honeymoon at the Great Northern from sex. He had a heart attack during sexy time. He had several books in his possession about the Kama Sutra, love poems of Lord Byron, and a plastic mask. Uh-huh. And Andy, you know, because the police are all checking it out, Andy's reading a book that he had called My Secret Life, and it says, once stimulated, the female will respond in such a way that the skin around her, dot, dot, dot. He's like, oh my, right? So kinky stuff. Now, the reference to Lord Byron is very curious. He was a famous poet, and he influenced Aleister Crowley to write poetry as well, because he was a poet as well. He also influenced Mary Shelley, who, of course, you know, Lord Byron was part of the whole mythology of the events that led to Mary Shelley writing Frankenstein or the Modern Prometheus book, which is a book that introduced the idea of horror and, I don't know if it introduced it, but popularized the idea of a horror story. It was written in an alchemist castle. It introduces the idea of transhumanism and science and man creating life and a lot of things, right? We talk about Frankenstein often here. Now, we should also note that in the midst of the kinky books, there's this clear mask that Andy actually puts on. And it's kind of funny, right? Because you're like, oh, they're real kinky. But could this be why the last episode was called The Masked Ball? You know, it would make more sense if this would have been in the last episode, but sometimes the world of Twin Peaks is wacky. Does it point to the idea of elites having abnormal, I don't want to say normal, I'm not sex shaming here, having unconventional sexual interests, right? Dougie Milford would be considered an elite in the town of Twin Peaks because his brother's the mayor and he owns the newspaper, right? Owning the newspaper is where it's at, folks. That's what you want to do. That's what they're doing. That's why Jeff Bezos bought the Washington Post. They're creating the world through the news. The world they want you to see and believe in. So Mayor Dwayne Milford shows up to see his dead brother, and he accuses his new bride, Lana, of killing him with sex. Lana claims that she has a curse going back to prom night because she was kissing a boy on prom night who ended up needing surgery for lockjaw. Hawk shows up and he's like, I got the cure, baby. Uh-oh, what's going on here? Right? Lana, there's already suitors coming after Lana. Meanwhile, Nadine, she's now on the wrestling team for men, and she's tossing Mike around like a boss. She even puts him in the Lex Luger torture rack. She wants to go on a date with Mike, but he's not having it. And he even begs Donna later on to tell Nadine that, like, they're still dating, because he's like, I don't want to date this lady. She's crazy. Meanwhile, Evelyn's brother shows up and tells James, because remember, James is working on Evelyn's husband's car, and her brother shows up and tells James that her husband actually beats Evelyn up. And she gets back at him by breaking his stuff. That's why she broke his car. It's some weird little kinky game they play, apparently. So Cooper goes and he visits this property, the Dead Dog Farm, because he's interested in buying the property. He finds baby laxative in the sink and cocaine on the table. It's the Twin Peaks trap house, right? The Dead Dog Farm is the Twin Peaks Trap House. And Cooper, of course, he's in full-blown FBI mode. He's not shaking that anytime soon. He realizes there's been a meeting there in the, just the past few hours. He's identifying the vehicles. It's a Mercedes, a Jeep, you know. We find out that the name of the property comes from the idea that a dead dog attracts good people and bad people. Kind of strange. They say that on the Irene Little Horse says, of all the people in the world, the best and the worst are drawn to dead dog, and most turn away. Only those with the purest of heart can feel its pain, and somewhere in between, the rest of us struggle. It's actually very interesting, right? You could dive deep into this almost, like a lot of Twin Peaks things. But to sort of look at it, it's Cooper, who's, of course, pure of heart, sympathizes for the property, and he's interested in it. But we find out that it's got this dark, you know, drug usage going on there, which is destroying lives, and it's a negative force. And also, when we get to Fire Walk With Me, you'll see that the baby laxative cut makes an appearance as well, kind of tying things together a little bit. So Dick Tremaine, he's trying to change a tire. He's doing terrible at it. And little Nicky's in the car acting like a jerk. Whatever, right? Who cares? Who cares? Moving on. Here's where we get our juicy bit for the episode. Back at the Great Northern, Colonel Riley from the U.S. Air Force is in town. He's investigating Major Briggs' disappearance, okay? And he has a conversation with Cooper and Truman. Take a listen to what he says.
Harry?
Cooper, this is Colonel Riley. He's heading up the Air Force's investigation into Briggs' disappearance.
Colonel?
Cooper, you were with Briggs when we lost our coordinates on him.
Yes, I was.
When you were at the site, did you notice any wildlife in the area?
Wildlife?
Birds? Owls?
Yes. Yes, just moments before the Major disappeared, I heard an owl.
Any visual contact?
Look, Colonel, Garland Briggs is a good friend of mine. Be a lot better if you'd just level with us.
We know about the monitors and the messages from deep space that you received pertaining to me.
You may know something, but you best get your facts straight. Our monitors are pointed at deep space, but the messages we intercepted, that Briggs showed you, were sent from right here in these woods. Now, where they were sent to is another question.
Might this have something to do with a place called the White Lodge?
That's classified.
Colonel, we'd like to help you, but you need to give us a little more to go on here.
Garland Briggs is the best pilot I've ever known. He was born with hardware most of us only dream about. I can tell you this. His disappearance has implications that go so far beyond national security. The Cold War seems like a case of the sniffles.
They're talking about the wildlife, the owls, and Cooper and Truman, they talk a bit more about the messages that Major Briggs was trying to relay to them. And the Colonel Riley there tells them that this Air Force unit has been monitoring deep space, but these messages, like the one he showed Cooper, it said Cooper, 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 actually come from the woods. All right? So they already know they come from the woods, but the question is, where are these messages going to? I guess the idea is that these forces in the woods are sending messages out to what? To who? To the cosmos. Cooper asks if they had gone to the White Lodge. Colonel Riley's like, that's classified area. We can't talk about that. Colonel Riley says that Briggs was born with hardware only others could dream of, and that his disappearances has implications that are at the top of national security, far bigger than the Cold War. Now, what could be bigger than the Cold War? Because the Cold War threatened the end of humanity, right? With the nuclear standoff between the Soviet Union and America. Well, aliens, right? We already know this. Ronald Reagan, when he was the president in the 80s, he he gave a speech about, because he was a Federalist, right? He was trying to do a global world government. And he, I think it was called like the United Federalist is the group he was a part of. It envisioned a world government. And he wanted that. And he said, how can we make that happen? How can we all join together with a threat, extraterrestrial threat? That's what he said. And, you know, he was president during the peak of the Cold War. We also hear, that the hardware about Briggs, it would suggest he's got this sort of antenna that can tune into the alien frequencies, the alien communications, which I would argue is relevant for season three as well, once we get there, okay? Meanwhile, James, he's making out with Evelyn, of course, and I feel bad for Donna. You know, she seems like a good girl, and James, he's very fickle, and he's kind of a low life. Seems like he's self-centered, but I think we're all misinterpreting James. I really do. But for now, as you watch it, you're like, what is this guy, man? Then back at the Northern, Bobby, he's flirting with Audrey, something we didn't see coming, and asks if she wants to celebrate with him now that he's working for Ben. And he even leans in for a kiss, and she curves him. Like, bro. She tells him that they should do business together, and it's becoming quite clear that she wants to use Bobby for some kind of purpose we just don't know yet. And, you know, Bobby, he gets into Ben's office. We see this miniature Gettysburg War reenactment and a Southern Confederate flag. He's dressed up in Confederate garb. And Bobby delivers these requested photos of Hank to Ben Horn. What are they of? We'll find out. Meanwhile, Catherine Martell, she's still got Josie working as her servant at the house while her and Pete enjoy a meal. And Pete delivers a poem. He says, wine comes in at the mouth and love comes in at the eye. I lift the glass to my mouth. I look at you and I sigh. And if we investigate that a bit more, you'll find out it's a poem called A Drinking Song by W.B. Yeats, who we already heard Mark Frost say that he was familiar with Yeats through his time studying theosophy, because W.B. Yeats is a major figure in theosophy. And he also ran the Hermetic Order of the Golden Dawn, a magical society, right? So we already know Mark Frost has some occult leanings or interests, right? So that's of no coincidence. Meanwhile, Audrey, she's doing some recon. She gives Cooper some photos that Ben received from Bobby. So she like intercepted these photos apparently, right? And it's of the dead dog farm. And the photos show Hank, of course, because he was tailing Hank. Jean Renault, Preston King, he's the Canadian Mounted Police guy, and Ernie Miles. They're all dealing cocaine from the Twin Peaks Trap House, the dead dog farm. And at this point, Denise, you know, David Duchovny's character, comes by and comes by Cooper's room to report on this, to see if they can get Cooper exonerated, because he's still trying to help, or she is still trying to get Cooper exonerated. And Audrey, she has to leave the room, right? Because they're going to have a conversation. But before she does, she kisses Cooper on the lips. What is that about? Are we going to see this long-anticipated romance of Cooper and Audrey? Is it going to happen? What was that kiss about? And she leaves, and then Denise looks over at Cooper and is like, how old is Audrey? Oh, my God. What a mess. Big Ed and Norma, they're still fooling around. They got some casual flirting, some dreaming of what could be. Because neither of them are happy in their current relationships. Hank overhears it, and he's twiddling a domino, this time with the number 7. He wants to kill Big Ed. Dick tells Andy that he thinks little Nicky is the devil, and implies that he may have killed his parents. That's the theory that Dick is believing in at this point, because we don't know how little Nicky's parents died. They were killed in a mysterious manner. Dr. Hayward tells Dwayne Milford that there's no evidence of murder in the death of Dougie Milford, so he probably just had a sex heart attack. Lucy is getting jealous of Lana now, because Lana's in the police station, you know, Dougie Milford's widow, and all the men in the station are enamored with this woman, including Andy and Dick, who she had under her, wrapped around her finger for many episodes. And it appears that maybe she does have this sort of curse, this witchcraftian love spell, which is what Dwayne Milford said. Remember that? Meanwhile, Denise gets Ernie to confess that Jean Renault tried to force him to sell drugs. You know, force him. He's deterring the blame here. And so they set. So Denise sets up a drug trafficking operation where Denise will show up to buy 4 kilos that Jean Renault is trying to force Ernie to sell, and Ernie will, you know, he's kind of snitching, right? He needs to get everyone there at the Dead Dog Farm to coordinate this deal. That's when they'll arrest everybody. And then Cooper can get off the hook, right? And get his FBI badge back. And we get to see him take the flannel off, put the suit back on. So what we want. Back to James. James hears Evelyn's husband abusing her, and her brother swears he's going to kill this guy someday. Ooh. Everywhere James goes, these poor women, man, they're never in a good way. Finally, this is good. Finally, Bobby comes home late at night because he's kind of losing interest in staying over at Shelley's place because then he's got to take care of Leo, and he's not trying to do that. So he goes home, and his mother's there, and you'll see, I'll put the image on the Instagram, you'll see that the mom has a lamp. Which is an owl, of course, which is obviously interesting because Bobby's father is Major Briggs, right? Who says the owls are not what they seem. So Bobby tells his mom about he and his dad had this binding moment. You know, I think it was season one at the Double R Diner where dad was talking about how he had this great vision of Bobby in the future being a decent human being because it was a dream that Garland Briggs had. Then the lights flash. And guess who shows up? It's Major Briggs. And he's all confused. He's asking how long he's been gone. His wife tells him it's been 2 days. He says, Bobby, put that cigarette out. And Bobby, having this newfound respect for his father, does. We're seeing a shift in Bobby Briggs. My God. She asks him, she says, is everything all right? And he says, no, it's not all right. It's not all right. Okay, now you got to put that in the back. I know your back pockets are getting full. We got to put that in the back pocket too. It's not all right. Where has he been? What's been going on? What's he learning? Why is it not all right? All these questions. Next episode, we're going to unpack some more answers. So stay tuned, right? Stay tuned. Your homework assignment, season 2, episode 13, Checkmate. AKA, I think it's episode 20. This is where we start unpacking some deep occult territories of Twin Peaks, all right? And I assure you, things will start ramping up. So stick with it. All right. Thanks for listening. Thanks for your support. Till next time, stay woke.